the village, hastening along the university drive. Girls on foot, girls on bicycles, girls running, and girls strolling arm in arm. Few of them wore hats. Many of them wore sweaters and short walking skirts of white duck or serge, and across the front of each sweater was embroidered a large W in cadet blue, the mystic color of Wellington University. In the midst of a shouting, gesticulating mob stood Mr. Murphy, baggage master, smiling good-naturedly. "Now, young ladies, one at a time, please. We've brought down all the baggage left over by the 9:45. If your trunk ain't on this train, it'll come on the next. All in good time, please." A tall girl with auburn hair and deep blue eyes approached the group. There was a kind of awkward grace about her, the grace which was hers by rights, and the awkwardness which comes of growing too fast. She wore a shabby brown homespun suit, a shade darker than her hair, and on her head was an old brown felt which had plainly seen service the year before. But knotted at her neck was a tie of burnt orange silk, which seemed to draw attention away from the shiny seams and frayed hem, and seemed to cry aloud, "Look at me! I am the color of a winter sunset. Never mind the other old togs." Surely there was something very brave and jaunty about this young girl, who now pushed her way through the crowd of students and endeavored to engage the attention of the baggage master. "I think my trunk was on this train," she said timidly.
"I hope it is.
It came from Louisville to Philadelphia safely, and when I rechecked it, they told me it would be on this train." Now Murphy, the baggage master, had his own peculiar method of conducting business, and it was strictly a partial and prejudiced one. If he liked the face of a student, he always waited on her first, regardless of how many other students were ahead of her, and, as he told his wife later, he took a fancy to that overgrown gal from the first. "I beg your pardon, but Mr. Murphy is engaged," put in a haughty-looking young woman with black eyes that snapped angrily. "Now, Miss Judith," said the baggage master, who knew many of the students by name, "don't go fur to get excited. I ain't made no promises to no one. It's plain to see this here young lady is a newcomer, and as sich, she gets my first consideration."
"Oh, please excuse me," said the girl in shabby brown.
"I'm not used to, I mean, I haven't traveled very much." Judith turned irritably away. "I should think you hadn't," she said in a low voice, but loud enough to be overheard. "Freshies have a lot to learn, and one is to respect their elders." The new girl put down her straw suitcase and leaned against the wall of the station. She looked tired, and there was a streak of soot across her cheek. The trip from Kentucky in this warm September weather was not the pleasantest journey in the world. While she waited for Mr. Murphy to return with news of her trunk, her attention was claimed by two girls standing at her elbow who were talking cheerfully together. "Yes," said one of them, a plump, brown-eyed girl with brown hair, a slightly turned-up nose, and a humorous twitch to her lips. "I have a room at Queen's Cottage. It's the best I could do unless I went into one of the expensive suites in the dormitories. And you know, I might as well expect to take the royal suite on the Mauritania and sail for Europe as do that." The other girl laughed. "You'd be quite up to doing anything with your enterprising ways, Nance Oldham," she exclaimed. "Oh, are you going to Queen's Cottage?" Here broke in the girl in shabby brown. "I'm there, too. My name is Molly Brown. I come from Kentucky. I feel awfully forlorn and homesick arriving at the university station without knowing a soul." There was a kind of ringing note to Molly Brown's voice which made the other girls listen more closely. "I wonder if she doesn't sing," thought Nance Oldham, giving her a quick scrutinizing glance. "Yes, I am at Queen's Cottage," she continued aloud. "But that's about all I can tell you. I feel like a greeny, too. We'll soon learn, I suppose. This is Miss Brinton, Miss Brown." Caroline Brinton was rather a nondescript young person with dreamy eyes and an absent-minded manner. She came from Philadelphia, and she greeted the new acquaintance rather coldly. "Your trunk ain't here yet, miss," called the baggage master. "Like enough, it'll come on the 6:50. Molly looked disturbed, while the black-eyed Judith standing nearby flashed a triumphant smile, as much to say, "It only serves you right for pushing in at a turn." "What are we to do now?" she asked of her new friends, rather helplessly. "Take the bus up to Wellington," said brisk Nance Oldham. "I know that much. There's one filling up now. We'd better hurry and get seats." The three girls crowded into the long, narrow, side-seated vehicle already half-filled with students. Even at this early stage in their acquaintance, the bonds of loneliness and sympathy had drawn them together. "I'm a stranger in a strange land," Molly Brown had confided to